All right, I am recording and going hello, everybody. Those of you who have joined us live all around Australia and a couple of internationals, we're going to log in. So welcome to everyone. And I'm also recording this, so those of you that were in apology for today will be able to access it in your own time. We've got four members presenting from their clinical experience today, and I'm going to kickstart us. And I particularly decided leadership focus. I wanted to talk about mentoring, particularly for the introduction stage of your neurofeedback career. So this is also a shout out to everybody who has achieved their BCN status, certification in neurofeedback as a practitioner. Because once you've achieved that, you can also submit an application to BCIA Australia to be endorsed as a mentor. We often get contact from people who are seeking mentoring, and it's good to be able to hook people up with somebody in their area, not just geographically, but in terms of field of work, the particular focus. So a bit of a blurb there. Yeah, let me just figure out how to drive this computer. So a couple of dot points there regarding BCA board certification and its value for us. Once you're certified, you carry that credential for 4 years, and you do need to maintain annual professional development so that after 4 years of certification, you apply for recertification and demonstrate that minimum 48 hours of ongoing PD. And I know those of you that have got certification or have recertified know this, but it's really just about pulling all this information together in one place so that those who are new to neurofeedback or not yet certified and thinking about that process have got a little bit of information to inform. So all candidates for neurofeedback certification require BCIA-approved mentors. You can get mentoring from a variety of people for a variety of reasons, but in order for it to be recognised by BCIA, it needs to, your BCIA, your mentoring needs to at least include 25 hours practical contact with or under supervision with a BCIA-approved mentor. The philosophy being those people will at least be familiar with the expectations of BCI, its ethics and its procedures. Your mentor certification remains current as long as you're still maintaining your BCN status as well. The BCIA have a website, so that's the international organisation, and they have guidelines there to support you. If you are taking on mentoring, there's a range of tools and strategies and suggestions about how to go about that. Today, I'm just giving you a brief overview of the practical components of my own approach. And if you want to shout out or ask a question and make a comment at any time, you just need to unmute yourself and feel free to interrupt. To my knowledge, based on my access as the chair of the BCIA, these are the people who've previously applied and been approved as BCIA Australian approved mentors. Some of you given me your email address to distribute. So those are highlighted in this list. So anyone else out there who is a BCIA approved mentor, if you want this page edited to include a direct link to your email, just let me know so that I have your consent, because I'm going to share this post-meeting, obviously, and if you want people to be able to get in touch with you for mentoring, it would be really convenient to have these hyperlinked good to go. And there's a few asterisks floating around there. Let me know if I've missed you, but the asterisks indicate those people who are also able to mentor toward the QEG diplomat. And thank you to all those people who've put your hand up for mentoring. I look forward to a whole lot more BCN folks being willing to take on that leadership. And you don't have to be expert. Remember, there are people at every stage of learning and every one of you with the achievements that you've got to be able to complete BCN. have got something to pass on. So that contribution to the field is much appreciated. So this is specific to the folk who are applying for certification in neurofeedback. There is a component on that application form that says that the candidate is required to have their mentor or mentors, because a number of mentors may be contributing to this. They need to have completed 25 hours of practical training. I'm getting some feedback here. Sorry, technical faults and difficulties. Okay, so a component of this 25 is self-regulation. So everybody who's applying for certification in neurofeedback also needs to have been a recipient. Depending on the course, the introductory course that you've done, majority of people have an opportunity to hook up an experience being on the receiving end, but it's also something that you should own. There's something that we, is that just...
You have just turned back there.
It's an alien in the room giving off a vibe. Okay, so in addition to that 10 sessions of self-regulation, you're required to have a minimum 100 sessions, not necessarily 100 hours, but 100 sessions of training with clients or patients. You also are required to do 10 case presentations with your mentor or mentors. And case presentations is not necessarily 10 individual clients. It may be that you're presenting one or more clients a number of times, because you may be presenting initial stages of assessment and protocol design, getting feedback on that from your mentor, putting in place an initial course of treatment, then having a review with your mentor and talking about progress and observations. So 10 presentations, not necessarily 10 different client cases. Now, these items you may be familiar with having gone through your own processes for certification, but we have an addition. In 2016, BCIA required the essential skills list to also be signed off by mentors, but it's only just been picked up and endorsed by BCIA. You will start to get on the bandwagon. You may already be doing this. If I'm really clever, I can take you to the website. I'm not sure if this will come up. Feedback. Oh, it's not doing its thing. Let me just escape and have a look. So I've got to reshare my screen. Oh, look at all those wonderful attendees out there. I just spotted the list. Welcome, everybody. Okay, so this is the Neurofeedback Essential Skills List. And a lot of people in Australia get their mentoring remotely from folk a long way away. So this might be quite tricky, and it's important for the mentor and the mentee to figure out how are you going to be able to demonstrate these competencies so that your mentor can sign them off. But with all this giddy modern tech, you may be able to bring your mentor via Zoom or other app to sit at your computer and listen to how you go through these things. But basically, there are some key practicum components from the blueprint that have been extracted to this list, and we're obliged to go through that with our mentees. So can your mentee explain or demonstrate how they explain to a new client, e.g. biofeedback, self-regulation concepts, operant conditioning, etc.? Can they talk about the stages of neurofeedback? Can your mentee talk about the client's role and responsibilities engaging in the neurofeedback process? So anyone who's been providing any kind of therapeutic support to clients might have a similar process, the consent and informed consent, explaining their processes in therapy. So it's very similar to that, being able to transmit those prior skills into this context. Being able to talk about skin preparation, making sure you have client consent for training, the limitations of training, if it's the level of evidence for the particular protocol you're trialing. You may need to indicate to your patient or client that this is an experimental procedure. If you're designing a protocol, that there's not a lot of literature support for, and so that's something that you need to be open with your client about your level of confidence in this protocol based on chiropractic clinical experience with prior research findings. Intake, assessment and protocol selection, being able to document the client's symptom, medication history and background relevant to the training goals, looking at a baseline assessment, whether that's QEG or a mini map, how do you go about collecting baseline data, being able to demonstrate knowledge of operation of neurofeedback equipment, using your hardware for the purposes that it's been designed, being able to show how you can navigate your way through the software and its various functions. I know I'm a member of the EAGRE Affiliate Network, and recently we were sent some how-to webinars, just getting into the software, reminding people of key features and maybe introducing this to some of the features we weren't familiar with. BrainMaster also has a whole lot of user videos available online for download. So how well does your mentee access those support resources to help them be familiar with their tech? Session management and reporting, how you're actually tracking what's going on in the session, working your way through those processes, maintaining up-to-date files. If you're working in a clinical context, we've got file management responsibilities to be able to retrieve data for 7 years post termination of the program, that's for adults, and until age 25 for kids. So what are you doing to protect data? Use of supplemental therapeutic training modalities, are you adding on HRV or breath work or alpha beta, whatever it is that you're doing. And so this is a document that a mentor should be going with the mentee so that in some way they feel confident that the mentee has these basic competencies in their practice. And that's available for everybody to download on the BCIA website, and it is also available in the BCIA Australia Dropbox. And if you don't know those details, I can send them to you. All right. So the essential skills list, that's a new addition for mentors to be signing off this component on the application form that says, I attest that this candidate has completed 25 hours of training to address all four of these items. If you haven't been a mentor for that person's 25 hours, you can edit this form to indicate, well, I know nothing about their self-regulation, but I can confirm they've done 5 case presentations with me and we've completed the essential skills list together. So mentor can just sign off the component that they are attesting to, and the candidate then has to seek additional or alternative mentors to sign off the components to make it up to that 25 hours. Cruising right along here. Alrighty. So very basic rundown of how I work with my mentors, just an initial meet and greet to determine what they want, what their interests are. If I think they're working in a field outside of my experience, I will identify a colleague who I think could make a better mentor or an adjunct to the sorts of things that I might be able to take them through. So we establish that suitability, work out what fees, if any, sometimes there might be a peer mentoring arrangement set up where you see that there's mutual benefit. You might like to draw up some sort of agreement that says what it is you're working on. Some of my mentees are also working through APRA registration programs, so they have to be quite anal about record keeping. So if you need to sign up supervision plans, that's something to consider. The basic information packs of this, let me just check. Yeah, so this is hyperlinked to a BCIA Dropbox. So when you get this presentation afterwards, you can click on this link and find all of these documents available to support you when you're working with your mentees. The BCIA information flyer, just a little bit about all the, our organisation, the application for certification process, recertification, etc. The Blueprint 2015 edition, the 36-hour didactic, is what we're currently teaching to. The BCIA Professional Standards and Ethical Guidelines, excuse me. BCIA Application for Certification, the core reading list, which is something that candidates need to be familiar with to prepare for the exam, and the essential skills list, which I previously referred to. So it's important to be familiar with all of these things, because if you're mentoring someone towards certification, they're really relying on you to understand the certification process and each of those elements that they're accountable to achieve in order to be ready for certification. So make sure you open that current edition of the application for certification, look at all of those elements and see what you can do to advise and support the candidates. The exam is very much based on the blueprint. So one model of mentoring that I've been using for some of my clients, particularly the ones who are sitting the exam, is to really just each session, we're just unlocking another one of the modules of the blueprint, going through all of the core concepts and making sure they're familiar with the history, the pioneers, seminal research articles, just unpacking that blueprint step by step and essentially just doing a compressed didactic, I guess a summary of what they should have done in the 36-hour training. But often when people are coming to sit the exam, it's been quite some time since they did their 36 hours and they've shifted into a focus much more on the practical training side of neurofeedback, managing neurofeedback day to day, rather than all of the theoretical underpinnings, learning theory, ethics, guidelines, history. So a good model in your supervision is not just to think about current practice, but to be revising and linking current practice to its theoretical underpinnings and to our history in neurofeedback. Additional resources. So some other things that I have that I'm happy to share, just some of the tools that have developed with my mentees, mentoring agreements, supervision records, case presentation templates, client session records. If you've got all those things going, we don't need these, but I'm quite happy to share if anyone's looking for those sorts of resources. Exam preparation, is that what we're up to? So in order for an applicant to be ready to sit the exam, it's expected that the exam is the last element of the certification process that the person has to complete, but it's not always. So some of the applicants for certification might have completed most of the components and feel that they're exam ready, but they're still working through their mentoring hours, or they're still working on updating their knowledge of human physiology and doing one of those online courses to try and refresh their skills in that area. So ideally, they've completed the 36-hour didactic training and the two prerequisite tertiary courses, human physiology and physiological psychology. Now, not on any kickbacks or whatever. However, I do highlight here the biosourcesoftware.com website Fred Schaffer's put up two units that meet these two prerequisites for BCIA certification. And if you can access them elsewhere and you've done them in prior tertiary studies, that's fine. But of the variety of courses that I've seen available that are BCIA accredited, these two seem to be really well structured, very relevant because of Fred's experience in biofeedback, and also really affordable, like about $120 a course. That's pretty cheap. There's also another resource on that website, which I haven't used, something like Neurofeedback 101. It's just a whole bunch of exam questions. So it's just a really good way for you to do a bit of a skills reflection or a knowledge audit, I guess. Just working your way through a whole lot of multiple choice questions and gives you back really good summaries of the correct response. So it's another way of accessing that knowledge base. The exam is hosted annually at ANSA, but there's also a link here to special exam. So if you've got a candidate who's not going to conference or who wants to sit the exam at any other time of the year, they can arrange that directly with BCIA for an online sitting. They need to arrange their own local proctor at a local university centre, and BCIA will communicate with that proctor in order to enable you to sit the exam. And our most recent BCN who successfully completed this special exam model is Aleki Russell. So congratulations to Aleki. Participants must have submitted their application for certification to BCIA Australia, so inquiries and applications through to our Gmail address, and they need to have paid their application fee. So there's an administrative fee that's paid directly to BCIA Australia. And then you'll get feedback from us to let you know if there's elements missing in your application or to confirm your application's in order, and to liaise with you around the type of exam you want to sit. And as long as that application's in order, we then table it with the international body, who will be looking for your certification fees. So you pay BCIA directly via their online site. This was an administrative decision to split these fees, because previously BCIA Australia had to collect it all and then take some of that money and forward it to the states. And this is an expensive and clumsy process. So now the fee splitting that's obliged between those two entities is managed by the applicant, paying an administrative fee to BCI Australia and a certification fee to BCI stateside. And so once they've got that fee, it's basically just logging the completed elements required for certification. So if it's only a successful exam pass that's required, as soon as that exam is marked, your certification status becomes active and the states will send out your certificate and details about logging in to the members area of the BCIA website, updating your directory information, etc. Mentors need to remind exam candidates that the BCIA provide a reading list, and that is updated from time to time. There's a core list of items on the reading list and then supplemental. So for exam preparation, it's really just focus their attention to the core reading list items. I think it includes currently Tom Kalura's text, Introduction to Mirror Feedback, and similar text by John Dennis. And there might be the Thompson's text up there as well. You can get an abridged version of that without all the beautiful colour plates of brain, etc. And you can also get it online. Make sure that they've unpacked that blueprint in detail. Can they, just talking to the blueprint, can they recognise the key concepts and define them? If they see a particular researcher's name, do they know who that person was and what his contribution was to the field or her contribution? What is this? Okay, number of exam questions relative to blueprints. So if it's a large number of hours on the blueprint dedicated to a particular module, you can anticipate there's going to be more questions on the exam dedicated to that module. So ethics, I think, is 2 hours in the blueprint, and there may only be 2 or 3 questions on the exam regarding ethics. So it's relative. The exam itself normally includes about 75 items, give or take, because every year there's a bunch of dummy items in there which are purely used for validity, reliability studies over time on the robustness of the exam. And so a number of the items that you complete won't count to your final result anyway. Mentoring session itself, I will wrap this up pretty quickly. So usual things you would expect, being able to establish, maintain rapport with your mentee, but also a professionalism, because especially if they're paying for sessions, you want to make sure that it's structured and needs meeting. So checking in with the supervisor, what they need out of that session, and you might be giving them some direction in terms of previous work that they've done and making sure that they're actually demonstrating growth from that previous work, making sure that you're not the only one doing all the talking and all the working, because you really want your mentee to be inputting and demonstrating their growth as well in confidence and content. So something else to keep in mind, that whatever the discussion, whatever the activity that they're presenting on, making sure that you find a way to link that back to the blueprint, bring relevance in every session to key components of that blueprint. You know, if you're talking about a particular protocol, threshold difficulty levels and shifts, when do you increase or decrease rewards or inhibits, link those decisions back to human learning theory and operant conditioning and other aspects of the client's presentation, but make it relevant to the blueprint. You're still, in this context, you're being an educator, so it's important that the session is supportive and educational and challenging. You want people to be growing from their current comfort zone into their next level of learning achievement. Useful links. And I know this is not an exhausted list, but if there's anything else you want me to add into this before I distribute it, just shoot me back an email. So how to get in touch with BCIA Australia, the information pack for new applicants, our international website, Applied Neuroscience Answer, ISNR, AAPB, the Neurofeedback and Psychology Interest Group of the APS, FireSource, variety of resources available there, particularly to meet those prerequisite course requirements. In Australia, we have three groups currently offering four-day didactic courses. Neurotherapy.com, shout out to Moish and his program, and Brain Clinics, Florian and Sally and Martine, and a growing number of people involved in the neuro, is it Brain Clinics? Who am I thinking of here? It's the NeuroCare crew that I was thinking of. Novatech, Leslie and John usually run a four-day in conjunction with the conference. So any courses that are currently being offered that I've been notified about are also up on the Answer website. There are also a couple of 4 days that have been accredited by BCIA for distance learning. So for people who don't want to do the 4-day intensive, there are a couple of other options, and a few of our certificates have completed these this version of their training. And some people have completed the 4-day numerous times, because every time you do it, you learn something new, and different presenters have their own perspective and experience and knowledge to share. I think I've completed it 3 times. I'm still a learner. Alrighty, that is me, and I'm more than happy to take any questions on that topic before I hand over to our next speaker. I'm just going to leave it there then. Let me just check. Moish, have I got you up next?
Yep, I'm here.
Beautiful. So I'm just going to have a quick squeeze at our program. Sorry folks, I'm just quickly having a look at our program to make sure I'm delivering this in the order that I suggested, so that if anyone's logging on specifically at 2 o'clock, they're getting the right person. So it's going to be Moish up next, and Moish, you should be able to, let's bring up this program to show people where we're at. So I've presented on mentoring topic. Now we're going to hear from Moish, who's looking at what he looks for when training people who are anxious. And then later this afternoon, we've got Shelley and Kerry that we're hearing from. Just give me a moment to stop that recording and restart for you. Moish, I want to be able to have separate recordings for each of these sessions.